Okay. Josh Weber, Metal Transformations. Thanks for coming in today. Yep. Excited to talk to you. We spent some time yesterday learning about you, but take a minute, tell me about who you are and what Metal Transformations does.
So I'm Josh Weber. I started Metal Transformations in 2021, and I got into it because I wanted to bring a faster way of building stuff to the farm. So that was kind of what got me started, was being able to build production style parts for the farm industry, because that's one thing that we don't have.
Why the farm industry? I mean, is that your background?
Yep. So I came from a family farm. I am third generation. We farm about 6,500 acres, and we're a completely corn, wheat, and beans farm. We also brought in cattle a couple of years ago.
6,500 acres. I mean, I think of an acre. I know it's not exact, but it's roughly a football field. Yeah. So you're talking 6,500 football fields. Yep. That you guys just kind of casually oversee, right?
Yeah. It's all irrigated too, so there's a pivot on about every piece of ground. So I've kind of grown up just around all that. So,
okay, so Metal Transformations, tell me about the name.
I wanted a cool logo, and I was like, there is a good way to tie in the M and the T to it to make it look like a plasma cutting head.
Yeah, so right there, right? Yeah.
Yep. So I went in and found that one. I was like, yeah, I think I'm just going to stick to that.
Good. I like it. So you grew up working on the farm.
Yep.
Third generation, 6,500 acres. And then you move on to, I mean, where we are today. And I know there's a lot to unpack between these two points, but today you are the owner of Metal Transformations.
Yes.
Where you're the initial projects were sort of turbocharging, you know, farm equipment or creating new tools that could be used
yes.
around the farm.
Yep.
And what was the first project that Metal Transformations cranked out?
The very first thing I did was a mailbox. I wanted one. I mean, just driving equipment down the road. We take a lot of big stuff down the road, so we would occasionally smack a mailbox.
How often are we talking? Like once a month?
More often than I'd like to admit.
Okay. And was it like, okay, we got to get off and at least try and tilt it back up? Or?
Oh, no. Usually it was gone. Okay. if it's
Sorry
not stuck
that.
On the spike of the piece of equipment we were taking down the road.
Okay.
So I wanted one that was going to hold up to that. And so I made one that was set on like a spring. So it acted like a punching bag. It would always come back up to center.
Okay.
So,
did you not want to be standing where it was when it? I mean, would it?
Oh, yeah. It would double tap you on the way back up.
It would. Okay. Yeah. Gotcha.
Yep. And they weighed about 300 pounds. So, okay. I mean, they went over with force and they came back up with force.
Have you tested what kind of like if you'd put something? Could you use it as a catapult if you cranked it down?
Oh yeah,
kind of, sort of.
Yeah, yeah. So it was a. It was a learning experience. Actually, the very first mailbox I made, I did with an open-ended spring.
Okay.
And I was like, I'm going to make sure everything still works. And I went and tipped it all the way over, and I let go. And it went back the other way, and the open end of the spring straightened out.
Oh,
and the mailbox just dropped all the way down to the bottom of the ditch. I was like, that is why I upgraded to closed-end springs.
Okay, so how much did you test how much force it did take to push that thing down?
You could tip it over with one finger.
You could?
Yep.
Okay, so it was really well balanced.
Yeah, so if you like pulled up too close to it with like a vehicle mirror, it would just turn off to the side.
Okay.
So that way even a vehicle mirror wouldn't get damaged.
How'd you set them in the ground?
So there's a 3-foot concrete cylinder that goes down with a anchor that's through the concrete.
Okay.
So it's not going to go anywhere. It's a big counterweight.
Yeah. Okay. So how many of those did you make? And how did you make them?
So I did all 13 of them by hand. They're out of a 6x6 post, and then I would hand plasma cut all the arches in them. And then all the triangles to make the peaks, and then like the top was a trailer hitch ball. So it kind of looked classy.
Yeah.
And then the bottom was just all sheet metal, so it kind of looked like crown molding going up.
Okay. So, but it was built like a brick shit house underneath.
Yeah, it was not going to go anywhere.
I like that. So do you have any of those still around?
Yeah, I've actually got quite a few of them in Halstead that are being used by people in town.
They're in service.
Yeah. And then I've got a couple in Wichita, too.
Is there actually any, I don't know the answer to this, does the Postal Service care what they put?
Nope.
Is there any, as long as they'll throw it on the ground if you want it.
Yep. Like, so as long as it's to the correct height, it can be anything that you want.
What is the correct height? That's what I thought.
I want to say it's like 42 inches or something like that. Nothing. As long as it's close to that window, I don't think they really care.
Yeah, like a yard and a half, some weird.
Yeah, something like that.
Something strange like that. Okay, so you started making mailboxes, but I want to wind it back. So we know that today you've got CNC capabilities. You guys have sophisticated drawing systems and can make, and we'll talk more about that. But tell me, how do we get here? So you're currently coming up on 30 years old, so you've got some good life behind you. Yeah. Where did you start with metals, and how did that all unfold?
Can you expand on that part?
Sure. So you were probably in high school in Halstead, right? And so when did you first kind of intersect with and, like, you know, begin the relationship with metals?
So when I was, I want to say, 9 or 10 years old, my grandpa taught me how to weld. And during the day, I would get all the metal cut, and then at night, I'd have to have someone help me weld it because I had no idea. But once he taught me how to weld, it was game over.
Okay, so you're 9 or 10. What are you cutting the metal with? You just bandsaw?
Bandsaw, yep.
Okay.
So bandsaws was what I did everything with. We had a torch, but I wasn't very good at it. Mm-hmm. I've actually cut off 3 of my fingers, tips of my fingers with the bandsaw.
Seriously? So,
yeah.
That's something to look out for.
I had lots of experience on that.
Everyone went for a couple fingertips.
Yeah. So there's actually still currently a sign hanging above our bandsaw that says, Josh, use with caution.
Yeah. I think that's good advice.
Oh, yeah.
When you cut yourself like that, it's one of those cuts that when I cut my hands that bad, that
Super glue and tape.
It's not a big deal. We'll finish the cut. I mean, we've already wrecked the hand, so let's just push it on through.
Throw a glove on and some electrical tape.
So you're learning how to weld. What kind of welding are you doing?
So I did stick welding. Mm-hmm. I didn't own a MIG welder until, I want to say, 2016. So everything I done was with stick welding. I could do it eyes closed behind my back. I got really good at it. So good at it, I actually went to a welding school, and the teacher was trying to show me a different way of welding, and I was like, no, I know my way works.
Yeah, you're too late. I've already got my stuff figured out.
And he told me that we're going to do a weld test, and if mine passed, then he would just quit give me static about it.
Yeah.
And so we did a weld test, and mine passed, and his actually broke.
Really?
So he didn't give me
any more static. How good did that
feel? Oh, amazing.
It was pretty good.
Okay. Yeah, I was like, yeah, my grandpa didn't know what he was talking about.
Yeah, yeah. He got you ready, didn't
yeah.
he?
Yeah.
So you're 9 or 10 years old.
Uh-huh.
You're welding.
Yeah.
You're cutting. And what sort of, so are you making what at that time? Just boxes and things, or?
No, I built a... built my house.
Okay.
So when I got into high school, I took an ag construction class, and I needed a project to last me the year. Mm. And I bought the metal, and I couldn't get a whole lot done during class. It was only an hour long. So I asked the teacher if I could take it home over the weekend and cut it. Well, when I brought it back Monday morning, I already had it all cut and welded together.
And was the teacher like, are you shitting me?
Yeah, he's kind of irritated because I was already on my third or fourth project so far that semester. And so he was really wanting me to, like, lock in on something. But I can't drag out a project that long, something like that.
So you were working on stuff at school, and you were telling me yesterday that you built a house.
Yep.
And it's stick built. It's like structurally looks like wooden framing, but you use
steel.
Use steel.
Yep.
Tell me about that decision.
So I built my house in the floodway, and so we were trying to make it so it was all serviceable. So steel was going to be the easiest thing to use. You know, you don't have to worry about it rotting. You know, it takes a while for it to rust away.
Mm-hmm.
And I was going to use foam board insulation inside. It was going to be nothing fancy. It was just going to be kind of a hangout place at the river.
Mm-hmm.
Well, we got that far, and a few hiccups down the road, we decided I'm going to make a full-blown house. And so that's where it kind of exploded and got a lot bigger.
Would you classify that as, like, scope creep?
Like what?
Scope creep, where, like, you're like, I'm going to do this, and then you ended up doing that. Like,
yeah.
You're like, well, we'll throw a second floor on it. Or
yeah, the drawing of that house was actually on a cardboard box that the shower came in. Mm-hmm. That was what I designed my whole house on.
Yeah.
And so it went from just a sturdy built kind of building to a full-blown house.
Yeah, it started off sort of as like a vault.
Yeah, yeah.
Right? And just became like a bigger one.
Yep.
And so you showed me the pictures, and maybe we'll be able to throw some up. But it's a nice-looking house, and you did a fabulous job.
Thank you.
And how long did that take you to do?
So I started on that my junior year of high school, and I finished it in 2018. So okay. it took a few years. It was 4 years in the making.
And you guys, I'm trying to remember, you guys got caught up in some red tape on the house.
Yeah, so we got a cease and desist letter that said that we can't do anything to the property because we were building the floodway and they didn't issue permits there. So that put us on hold for about a year and a half of that 4 years. So
I suppose you just went on other things. You weren't standing there in the yard waiting for the permit.
No, I started doing tree work, clearing out trees, because it was about 20 feet back in the trees when I first started the existing foundation.
Oh, it was?
So okay. It wasn't right on the river. The river's actually 100 feet behind my house. So my house is on the bank. So there's a lot of trees to kind of clear out and make it look like it could be a yard. So.
Have you had the water come up on you?
Oh, yeah. Yep. I've had
You got to sleep with floaties on kind of thing?
So the first week that I moved in the house, it flooded. And
kind of a welcome to the neighborhood deal.
Yeah. So there's a dike that goes around Halstead, and they had shut the gates to the dike. So I'd park my truck up on top, and I'd walk across the bridge.
You mean around the whole town?
Oh, yeah. Yep. So the only way to get into town is from the south side, and you'd have to go all the way to Wichita to go all the way around.
It's like the kingdom of Halstead if you got to get inside the castle.
Yeah. So funny story on that one is, so I didn't get my jeans and boots wet. I'd just take my pants off on the road and walk into the house.
Keep it simple.
Yep. Yep.
Just not overthink this.
Yep. It was.
Did you keep your kickboard in the bed of your truck? get up to the house?
Yeah. We had pulled a John boat up to the house one day. I had a bunch of railroad ties in my front yard, and I didn't tie them down, so a lot of those were floating away already.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
So those are going to be I-beams eventually, I suppose.
Maybe. We'll see.
Something like that.
Yep.
Or just get rid of them.
Yeah. I'll probably end up topping off with concrete when everything's said and done. Maybe when I get married, I'll let that decision be up to her.
Don't want to do it again, right?
Nope.
So you're starting to you got the house getting built, and you got it finished. You got the permit. You had the flood, maybe another one after that.
Yeah.
And then you said in the beginning that you were farming, you were doing cows and stuff like that. Where do the cows fit into all this?
So when we graduated high school, my cousins and I, we didn't go to college. And our dad told us that if we didn't go to college, we had to bring something back to the farm. So we decided to bring cows. We started with 8 cows originally. And a couple years went by, and we got up to about 130 cow-cow. It was a cow-calf operation.
And this is on the farm proper, on the 6,500 acres?
Yep.
Is that where, okay.
Yep. And we kind of had our own grass that we would keep them on too. And then during the winter, we'd put them on stocks. And so that was kind of all in addition. But we had bought a set of cows from New Mexico, and we had fought blackleg when it came back here.
What's blackleg? I don't know what that is.
Blackleg is a disease that they would get, and there's really no way to stop it once it gets started.
So it's going to plow through the entire herd.
Yeah. So we lost, out of those 35 cows that we bought, we lost all the calves and a couple of those cows. And I was like, I can't afford to put my money into cows when I can have metal sitting on a rack, because metal was what I enjoyed, and that was kind of my side gig at the time. So I sold out my share of the cows and decided to put metal on a rack because I can keep it there a whole lot longer and not have to worry about it dying.
So is that when you kind of started really getting into the metal? Yep. You're like, okay, the cows are getting sick. I'm selling out. I need to get something that's going to be a little bit more healthy.
Yep.
Right?
More long-term safe. Even if you buy high, it's still going to hold its value so you can sell it for something.
So what year is that when you're going from cows to metals?
2021.
Okay. And you got a piece of gear around that. That's when you were like, I'm doing this. So what'd you get?
So originally I was doing it on nights and weekends. Nights and weekends kind of turned into nights, weekends, mornings, and then afternoons. And then it turned into, hey, I'm going to do this all winter. So it slowly started building from the nights and weekends to doing it for the winter time when we were slow.
Okay.
And then it turned into winter times into spring. And about that time, I was like, Dad, I can't afford to come back to the farm. I'm way too busy.
What were his thoughts on that?
He's supportive of it.
Okay.
He knows that I'll always end up coming back to the farm.
Sure.
But I wanted to get this metal business going to be able to, I wouldn't call it off-farm income.
Yeah.
And that's about the only way to farm right now is to have off-farm income.
Is that right? It's most, if not all, are supplementing otherwise.
Yeah, the industry is getting pretty tight. So
is that industry consolidation that's occurring, or is it just sort of a bad, like, weather, been in a bad run of weather situation, or all the above?
The market's just been rough with just prices.
Okay.
All your inputs are so much higher than what you're able to sell it for. So if you can't supplement it with off-farm income, you can't cover that half, you know, that the farm isn't going to cover.
Sure. Understood. So so you're getting off the cows, you're going into the metal. What's your first move? I know you're making mailboxes and you're getting more busy. You know, nights become days and days become, you know, and now you're telling your dad you're going to go do this full time. You probably had that moment that money do, like once you've said this is what I'm doing, you're like, oh, shit, so, what am I going to do?
So there was really no turning back after I got a CNC plasma cutter. That was the turning point.
For the uninitiated, what is a CNC plasma cutter?
It is a computer-driven table that runs a plasma cutting head. So you can draw whatever you want, and it will go and cut it out. So,
and it's cutting like sheets of metal?
Yes.
And the thing just runs and goes over it.
So it can go, I mean, I've cut up to 140 inches a minute down to 4 inches a minute cutting 1 inch. Not 1 inch, 2.5 inch on that table. We're cutting out teeth for a clamshell bucket for a bridge crew. And it cuts slow, and there's a lot of sparks on that.
Yeah.
But we'll cut it all the way down to 28-gauge stainless on there. So, and it just rips through it.
And so you bought the table when? And
that was, I think I got it in July. I want to say July of 20 is when I got that table.
What brand did you go with?
I did Boss CNC out of Kalmar, Iowa.
Okay. There.
I'll tell you, the customer service there was, you can't even compare it.
Okay.
I can call them any day of the week, anytime, Sunday afternoon, somebody will answer and they will get me going. And
okay.
It's just amazing. Travis's, the owner's name, awesome guy.
Got it. And so top notch.
Oh yeah.
On that front. And I'm going to assume the gear's great.
Oh yeah. I'll probably never go to a different brand.
There you have it. So tell me a little bit about what's it like being an owner of Metal Transformations or other shops like it. Like, what's the day like? How do you, you know, if you're like a lot of other owners, like you wake up and the first thing you think is, holy shit, you know, like what, I'm back and it's what's going on and what's not going on.
You know, when it's busy, it's awesome. You can kind of keep everybody moving, but oh boy, when it gets slow, it's scary because it's like, there's nobody else that's backing me up.
Okay.
So it's like, I've got to have something moving through the doors. And when it got slow about November this last year, I was like, I don't know how I'm gonna keep it going because I wasn't established enough to be able to make it through 6 months of mm-hmm. slow.
Yeah.
And now we're rolling up on that 4 or 5 months mark, and it's like, okay, we got to figure out something.
Right. And so that's when you got to kick it into sales gear.
Yep.
The owner go bang on the doors and see what's going on.
You've got to figure out where you're able to make up in your margins.
Okay.
And where I found is material.
All right.
So
tell me about that process, which is, what's brought us together is that you are a user.
Yep.
On Brizos, and we talked about that and reached out and wondered if you want to come talk. Mm-hmm. So I think this may be where we start to enter your story. Okay. Is where you tell me, but maybe the market's leaning out a little mm-hmm. bit for you, and you're having to say, kind of take a step back and say, how am I really going to do this?
Yeah. So
tell me about kind of that chapter of you figuring out your path forward there.
So I was buying from one supplier since day one. I never questioned it. It was who I bought the material from to build my own house. And I was buying 1-inch plate at the time, and the price of it was just, it was $2,000 at the time for 1 5x10 sheet. And I didn't know any different. I would just...
Sounds good.
Yep, we're going to get it coming. And like I told you yesterday, I wasn't getting these jobs. And I was like, how is everybody else doing this?
Okay, so you're getting a build or a job you can quote
yep.
to a customer, and you're like, okay, I'll be right back, and you go work up your quote. And so yep. your material cost inputs are coming from
so high.
One supplier, yep. they're high.
Yep.
You're working up your number and saying, here you go, and you're not getting any jobs.
Nope, couldn't do it.
And did you understand in the moment what was going on there? Are you kind of like, am I just like out of the circle here? Or
I mean, since I was never in the metal industry before like this, I mean, I came from a farm, so I probably didn't price around like I should have. But when I got started with Brizos, the pricing was just, it was day and night difference from what I'd been buying. I was like, okay, what's going on here? And I ended up calling back to that supplier, and I was like, hey, did I buy two sheets, or did you charge me for two sheets? Because I'm getting it from half price.
Yeah.
I mean, it was just day and night difference.
And was there a response to that? They're like,
nope, that's just what your price is.
Yeah.
And there's no, I was like, I just can't afford to do it through you guys anymore.
Right.
So
you're cutting your teeth here. Like you're kind of being like, oh, they're yeah. totally okay doing that.
Yeah. It was a learning experience. That's for sure.
Okay, so the other thing, when we were making Brizos, we were thinking about what is buying.
Mm-hmm.
And I've got this soapbox I can stand on about this, but I'm not going to. I'm going to simply just sum it up by saying that a buyer is thinking about the time associated getting it yeah. or just pricing it, just time.
Yeah.
What are they going to pay for it? And what's the quality of it? Mm-hmm. Meaning, like, are they going to get what they want? Do they have to upgrade, downgrade, substitute, whatever.
Yeah.
So time, cost, and quality. And so we were thinking about price, and we were like thinking, this isn't an undercut the market exercise. This is the price just needs to be good, because if we can turbocharge speed
yeah.
and make it like just offensively fast, that's really important. And so these are assumptions we're making. How does the speed of what we're doing play into what you're doing?
So not only is it fast to get, even get material in, but where I focused on was being fast as well on cutting or sending out the door, and also for bidding jobs. Just having the app where I can just fly in and say, hey, I need this material. I already know the time and what's going to take and my inputs on that. So I know this side, but I didn't know the material side and getting it fast.
Mm-hmm.
That is where you guys excelled. And that's what was a turning point for me, is to be able to do it a lot faster.
Yeah. So you've had an experience where you were relatively new to the metals world at this time. And so you didn't have, what I would say a super long-standing relationship with any one vendor. Your actually first experience was was kind of off-putting.
Yes.
Which is like kind of like, what a dick.
Yeah.
And so, and then how did you even hear about Brizos? I mean, up to the, to this date, we've been really iterating different versions to really to optimize the speed, you know, the quality, the, all the stuff we talked about, but haven't really leaned too hard into marketing yet. Yeah. So how did you come around to it?
So I had a friend of mine that is a supplier back at home, and I was always I was always pricing through him.
Okay, tell me, like, just so, like, you're just banging him every day or whatever.
Oh, yeah, I was calling him, texting him, hey, sending him emails at night, hey, I need a price on this, can you get this to me? And eventually I went there on Sunday afternoon, and I was cutting some of my own metal there, and he said...
So there's a pal to
it. Yeah, okay. Yeah, I'd say he's a really good friend now.
Yeah.
And he said, I'm gonna set you up with one of my suppliers.
Okay.
And so he got a hold of one of your guys here and got me set up, and that was the turning point. That was awesome.
And you said he said something to you when he did it.
He said, "Let's keep this between us. This is it's a good deal." Yeah.
Yeah, that's such an interesting dynamic and something that, you know, we're heads down in here a lot trying to figure out. When you look at our user interface, it's very simple. Yeah. But anyone who's been around the metals industry knows that there's a lot of wiring going on in the back to get it to work the way it does. So we sit here and we just create scenario after scenario after scenario. And one of the dynamics is that we've noticed is that it actually works so well for buyers that they don't want other buyers in their area to actually fucking know about it. Because now with Brizos, they're getting their quotes in really fast.
Yes.
So their quote-to-sale ratio is going up as well because you're getting those deals.
Yep. So if you can't get it fast, it gives them time to think or look elsewhere. Mm-hmm. It's like if you're that very first person that sends them back a quote, and they're like, oh, man, we just don't have to look anymore. This guy, it's a good price.
Mm-hmm. Good
they're,
enough,
yeah,
right?
Yeah. Yeah. They're just going to go for it because they're thinking about it. So, and that's where I like to excel. It's like, hey, I'll have this to you tomorrow.
Yeah.
It's like I keep a fair amount of material on hand for overnight stuff, but for like bigger jobs, 2 days I have material in on truck. So
let's swing back to metal transformations. You said I have material on stock if something's a rush job or so. Tell me about what it is that Metals Transformations does specifically. Like, are you guys a custom fabrication shop? What do they call rapid prototyping? If you need something kind of in your hands, you want to see how it works, you can cut out the pieces, get it welded up. So pretend I were someone else and I like, hey, I got this project. What do you guys do?
So that's kind of where I like to focus on is one-off stuff.
Okay.
I don't want to go do 100 parts. It kind of gets boring. My ADHD kind of takes over.
Yeah, it starts to.
Yeah. Yeah. So that's where I like to do is like a guy will come in and say, hey, I need one of this, or hey, can you build me one of this or two of this?
Mm-hmm.
Oh yeah, I'll definitely do that because it's fun. You know,
I'll do two, not three.
Yeah, yeah. And so that's where I got started. I originally just wanted to do flat work, so I just wanted to CNC cut or eventually get a CNC press break and be able to bend and just send out parts.
So when I'm thinking flat CNC, I'm thinking of like signs or like grills and like something that is. It's not a complicated thing, but it's a dimensional thing. Like it's going to be flat and anything you might want to. You were talking about you get standouts because you want to mount something on a wall that's flat. Is that am I on the right track there?
That and like I didn't mind doing like commercial parts. Mm-hmm. Like even if it was quite a few parts that came out, it was material moving, and that's where you make your money is material moving.
Okay.
So. I don't mind cutting out 100 of one part. That's fine because it's the table doing it. I don't have to sit there.
Is it a set it and forget it?
Yep. You got to babysit a little bit.
Yeah, got to kick it every once in a while.
Yeah, yeah. We have our days.
Yeah, no, I hear you. That's the way it goes.
So, started doing that. One-off projects is really where I like to focus. That's one thing that big machine shops won't do, or even just pretty decent sized weld shops.
I'm going to put you on the spot real quick.
Okay.
What are your three favorite things that you've made at Metal Transformations?
Oh.
And setting apart the, we're going to get to bumpers and things. That's, it blew my doors off. So, like, other than that, like, you think back over the projects you've done, and I'm not, you know, not even how much they made you, didn't make you. What was just something you were like, that's cool?
So I had a customer in Wichita. He wanted me to build him a deck on the backside of this building. And it was 18 feet deep, 65 foot long, completely out of steel.
Before you continue, is that because he knew about your house?
Yeah, it was actually, yeah, one of my good friends, his dad is a contractor. So
like, this guy makes like,
yeah,
stuff like
he
that.
He had no idea I did on-site welding.
Okay.
And so when he figured that out, he's like, hey, I'm going to have you do this. And okay. So we spent about 2 weeks at that job, which is about 45 minutes from where I live, which was, it's not a bad deal. But yeah, so
that's a massive structure.
Oh, yeah, it was awesome.
So kind of, I'm thinking you've got cantilevers going on. Is it, what? How high up are we?
About 14, 15 feet.
Okay.
And I'm not one of those OSHA people, so.
No shit.
Yeah. So we were like hanging off the thing like monkeys with, you know, our suitcase welders, and we're just kind of going to town up there.
Any lanyards in sight, or it's just like,
oh, no.
You know, don't be a sissy, just yeah. Get up there and do it.
It's not the fall that kills you, it's the landing.
That's something I'll remember yeah. As I'm falling. Yeah. Gotta stick the landing.
Yeah, so that was probably one of the coolest big things I like things that people see.
So I'm thinking like you've got the deck part, and then you maybe have, are you doing like triangle cantilever kind of things, or how'd you affix it to the?
So it is in the, I can't remember what the district is called, but like they couldn't add anything onto the building. They couldn't add anything onto the concrete. Everything had to be built with what's there.
Okay.
And so like we're driving anchors through the concrete to be able to hold the deck up against the building, and then it was an old railway station is what it was.
Okay.
So we had angling across the face side of the concrete, so everything got welded on there.
That's like your ledger board, basically?
Yep.
Okay.
So every piece was a different height all the way around, getting all that level, and then...
And did you have to treat, like, is this old rock kind of stacked? I'm thinking, like, train station where it's kind of jagged, or do you have a nice smooth surface?
Smoothish.
Did you have to like chisel out a, like basically a channel to get that in there, or
no? That part was pretty flat.
Okay.
And then we would go up top with the boards, and so the boards would kind of fit around stuff.
And the boards meaning the decking.
Yeah.
Or, okay. Yeah. Your joists, like basically your framing, though.
The whole frame is out of steel, and then all the stairs were steel and concrete. So we did C channel, kind of upside down, filled up every step with concrete going down. So. Yeah.
So you're talking big, like, C-channels like this.
Yeah, it was 14-inch, 12 to 14-inch. I can't remember right now what the exact size of it was. But
okay.
Yeah, it was. That was one of the cool projects just because the people get to see it.
That's like a piece of art. I mean, that's serious.
Yeah.
I mean, the structure's got to be there, but, I mean, where do you go to learn, I mean, like...
The farm.
Yeah, exactly.
That's where everything came from. Kind of a saying, if it's not overbuilt, it's underdone.
Right.
And so anything I build, it's going to be heavy.
You're just lucky you didn't tip the whole fucking building over.
So like, I didn't really need an engineer for this. I'll figure it out.
Yeah. Let me know if it breaks, which it won't.
Yeah.
So I asked you for three. So that's one. Okay. What's the second one?
Well, I'm going to say bumpers is probably the other one.
All right, we'll shelf that for a moment. What's number three?
I built a lot of just stuff from all over the place. I say staircases. Staircases are probably one thing I like just because there's a lot of little pieces in them.
Uh-huh.
And if you do them well, a lot of people look at them. Mm-hmm. I mean, you walk up a staircase everywhere you go. Yeah. So somebody sees good quality on there, they're like, where did that come from?
Like, you notice like, when you put a hand on a railing and it doesn't move? You're like,
yeah.
All right.
Yeah.
Like, that's pretty good.
I've been like the guy that, you know, you go somewhere and you look at somebody else's welds and I'm like,
that's rough.
How do they do that? You know?
Yeah.
I like to be the guy where they go and look at that and be like, whew, that thing's not coming apart.
Right.
Way overdone.
So you're walking around kicking railings at just commercial places. Just,
oh, you know, got to judge
what
them.
A piece of shit.
Yeah.
Field trip or something?
I did this air duct in a college building. It was a repair is what it was. It had already passed inspection.
Mm-hmm.
And I get there, and the thing looks like it was welded together with popcorn. And he told us it passed the liquid test. I was like, there's no way. I'm literally looking at a gap right into the tube. Pieces of all thread, blocking holes. I mean, boogered up.
Not good.
Yeah. It was on a kitchen duct in a commercial kitchen for where they would do TV shows.
That's great.
And so we had to lower this whole duct down. It was like 600 pounds. And we did it just overnight. It was while the building was shut down. So we had to lower this down, flip it around because they'd put it on backwards where it was smoke, sucking the smoke towards you instead of away.
Yeah, okay.
And, we got up in the ceiling, and it's a mess. We ended up TIG welding everything upside because we couldn't have smoke in the building. So
right.
Put a MIG weld or stick weld it.
Got it.
And, yeah, that was another cool one just because you're like, hey, you know, look above that. That's something I did.
That is cool.
Yeah.
So, and this is all in the Halsted or Halsted area. What town is Halsted near? What larger city?
We are 30 minutes northwest of Wichita.
Okay.
So a lot of my work is actually in Wichita.
Okay.
So
if you're in Wichita, give Josh a ring, okay?
Yeah.
So we got to talk about bumpers.
Okay.
Because this was like, you've opened my eyes to an entire world that I hadn't thought a lot of time, I hadn't spent a lot of time thinking about, candidly. So Demolition Derby. You tell me what's going on here.
So I had a neighbor come across the street and asked me if I could build one bumper for him.
Like, so they saw you sparking away in there, and they were like, maybe he builds bumpers?
Yep. Or? Yeah. The neighbor did Demolition Derby, and he knew that I kind of liked it. I like going to the shows and watching it. So he asked me to build him a bumper. Well, I got on, and I got all cut out, and I was like, well, I'm going to make a couple more of these.
Did he come to you with did you know enough already? Like, you knew exactly what he was talking about?
No, I had no idea.
Did he show you a picture, hand you some plans?
Showed me a picture, and okay. There's some files out there that everyone in the industry uses.
Okay.
But nobody can change them. Everyone only wants to deal with the files. So it's one size kind of fits all. And so I went in, and I was like, I want to make something different.
There's
six different styles that I started out with, and I was just going to build one of each style and take it to the show and sell out and be done, make a little bit of money on it.
So just so like we're all on the same page, typically you think about a bumper as something that is maybe plastic, maybe dense a little, maybe, you know, it's kind of just to ease the impact in some way. It's a bumper.
Yeah. No,
I want everyone to think about the front of an old steam locomotive. Okay, this thing is not about softening anything. Okay, this is a weapon.
These are, most of them are fully 3/8 thick bumpers, and there's a grid in there that's every 3 inches going all across the bumper, horizontal and vertical.
Okay.
So there's no way that these are denting, being bent.
Mm-hmm.
I actually had my first one break. It sheared off.
Were you in tears, or what happened?
It was kind of funny because there's a lot of other competitors out there that build these bumpers, but this car was up against one of my own bumpers.
Wow.
And I knew it was going to be one or the other. One was going to break because I know I build these things very stiff.
It's like two elder ones.
Yeah.
So you'd never seen one of them? You've seen them bend and stuff.
No.
Or no?
Usually they break. I mean, these are very stiff bumpers.
So from what you showed me, that I think it was called Blizzard Bash.
Yeah.
Okay,
yep.
2024 is when we watched.
Yep.
Go watch this. We'll put a link in. This is something else to see if you haven't seen it. So you've got maybe 50 cars in an arena, and they all start sort of like really organized, kind of pulled in like parking spaces. And the horn or whatever goes off, and everyone just starts milling around in these things.
Yeah.
And these bumpers are just designed to pierce, break, you know, anything that's in front of it.
Yeah, so these bumpers, they have actually have a 14-inch point, so that's max on the rules. So if
there are rules.
Yeah, quite a few, but the point of these is to be able to reach in as far as you can get. So, like, if you hit a car on the side, especially, like, the driver's side, you can knock a wheel off, and then you get into that engine compartment.
Okay.
You can do some damage with one of these bumpers if they get reached into an engine compartment.
What if you don't hit between the bumper and the A post, and you hit between the A and the B post? I mean, are these things going to pierce through a door and cave in a femur kind of thing?
Yeah, that is actually happened. They've sent a lot of people to the hospital, some of them in very rough shape. So,
okay.
Yeah, the sport is not – there's a lot of dangers with it, but it doesn't stop people. People know it comes with the territory.
Yeah, so one of the rules you were explaining to me was – how do you win, which is last man standing.
Yep.
Right. But there are also rules along the way, which is one fire per car is okay.
Yep.
But if you go and have a second one, you're out.
Yep.
So I thought that was interesting to have. What other sort of disqualifiers exist?
No driver's door hits. There is stuff that it does happen, but depending on if it's very intentional, they'll take you out. They'll walk out there, break your flag, and you're done.
Okay. And that must occur because that's a shit show going on. Like, there's no way it's...
And there's some that aren't intentional, and then there's also some drivers that they'll put the driver's door right there, so they're using it as a tool.
They are.
Yeah. So it's like, hey, I'm going to put my door right here, right where they're coming. So they either have to stop or they're going to get out.
So they use the driver's door offensively.
Yes. Yep.
That's a risky move.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, they're these doors, I mean, the framework inside of these, they're using like 1-inch by 4-inch steel bars to make their protection.
Are they in a cage, effectively?
Yeah.
Ish?
Yeah, you could say that.
Yeah. Well, I saw they're not using 5-point harnesses.
No,
though.
No.
These guys are just like buckling up and...
Yeah, you're lucky to have a waist strap and a pillow bolted or a duct tape to the... To the armrest.
So, when is your derby career going to start? I mean, it sounds like you're pretty close to this. How have you not gotten dragged into the driver's seat?
My mom.
Yeah. You know, everyone here knows the feeling.
Yeah.
So she's just not in favor of that sort of thing.
No. I mean, I built these bumpers to try to get into it, mm-hmm. to be able to afford it, and then now I'm like swamped before every single show. And it's like the time I would be working on a car. I'm building bumpers for other people.
Yeah, it's kind of like, would you rather be the guy in the town making the shovels for the gold miners?
Yeah.
Or would you rather be the gold miner? Yeah. I think you'd rather be selling the shovels.
Yeah.
You know, because on average, you'd rather be selling the shovels.
Yeah, so I'll sit in the vendor hall while the rest of them are doing that. But it's really fun to watch. It's you meet a ton of good people there.
Yeah, you were saying that you guys did a fundraiser most recently and were able to raise basically $90,000.
Yeah, so
for a cancer patient or survivor.
Yep.
Or...
So the very first year I went to the show, there was a benefit auction. It was the very first year that someone had actually came out of the bleachers as an auctioneer to auction stuff off.
Mm-hmm.
And it was just like, they originally just passed around a hat and said, hey, you know, if you can donate money, here you go. And a lot of people did. It was really cool to see that. And then vendors started bringing out stuff to donate. And that was the first year I'd ever gone. I was like, I want to be a part of that.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that was anything else to give you chills, that topped it off. And it was just like, that's something I'd be proud to be a part of. And that's the that's the derby community right there.
Yeah.
And the next year I went as a vendor, and I donated a bumper, and that bumper would normally sell between $900,000.
Mm-hmm. $900,000.
$900 to $1,000.
Okay. Total difference.
Ooh, I'd love that.
Yeah. Solid chunks of gold.
So that bumper sold for $4,500.
Oh wow.
And I was like, that's awesome. This is something I'm. Whole reason for it. It was one of the highest things to sell at that auction.
That's cool.
So this year I did another bumper. But this time I had everybody that came by my booth sign it because I wanted everybody to be a part of it. And that bumper sold the first time for $4,500, and it was donated back sold again for $1,800, donated back, sold again for $1,500, donated back, and really? I sold again for $1,300.
And that's like five recycles.
That was the only thing at that auction that went for over $1,000. And so I told myself, I'm going to do this every year because that is something I want.
No, that's...
It was awesome.
Because I know it's a little bit of time, but that's hardly the point, right?
Yeah, material and money is nothing, but helping out somebody, that's where it's at.
And that ties into another one of your pastimes. It sounds like a really similar community, which is this volunteer fire community that you've been a part of, which is something I've got experience with, and you've described kind of how that was, which is it's just a really family-oriented, community-oriented group. And so are you still part of the – I know you've got, you know, all this stuff spooling up that you're busy with, but to the extent you can, are you still involved with that?
Yeah, 100%. I always wanted to be a part of something that people never saw behind the scenes.
Yeah.
And I figured out in that you see people at their worst. Mm-hmm. And most of the time they won't remember you the next day if you see them out in public. And it's – I don't care to be that person.
Right.
You know? I just love it. I love doing it.
Yeah, and you guys have a good crew. Do you guys ever? I mean, I know it's volunteer, and you guys are out doing your stuff during the day, and then you'll get a ping on your phone or otherwise, and you guys all converge on the. Yes. Do you guys converge down on the station, or do you guys go direct?
There's a lot of both. So depending on the call, some of us will just go straight to the scene, or if it's going to be like a big fire or a grass fire, we all go to the station. So it's very entertaining to see all of us pull up, and I mean, four-wheelers, tractors, high loaders. I mean, everyone's there.
Okay, what do you guys have for a pumper there? Like, what are you guys rolling with?
So we've actually got a Pierce engine and a Pierce Quint.
Okay.
And then we've got a couple Ford trucks for squads, and then we've got a it's an old military cab over truck for our brush truck. Mm-hmm. And then a couple ambulances and a Kenworth tender, so.
I remember when we were in training, we had this, you know, where all the hoses are in the bed.
Yeah.
And the first time you stand behind the engineer's panel, you know, if you have all these levers, it's like you're in the fucking cockpit.
Oh, you're very overwhelming.
It's very overwhelming. Yeah. And the whole thing's like going like that. And you're turning up the throttle of the pump, right?
Yep.
You know how you had like the thumb, like you crashed out.
Oh, yeah.
So you're going like that. And the throttle's coming up. And the whole, all the gauges are going.
Yeah, and like you that. Hope you don't open the wrong valve and one of the ones the hose bed opens up. Yep.
So we had a kid on the 2-inch. He fucking, you know how the levers, you screw them back to loosen them, and then you pull them down, right?
Yep.
And so this guy's in the whole fucking the hose in the bed just went, and the way that looks. Like when that thing's charged in the bed,
you're not the favorite person that day.
No, right. Clean this shit up.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And we had a guy that, and this is unrelated, but a guy that was on the fire department that, you know, those deer platforms that you plug into your receiver for your car. Yep. So we got a call and everyone's hauling ass. So we had beepers, right? And so everyone's coming from around. This guy's running across the parking lot, comes tight around the back of a car at night that has one of those. And he, as his leg was coming forward, put his shin right in one of those deer platforms, like one of those.
Oh, yeah.
And it's the world stopped turning for this guy. I mean, he was in so much fucking pain. He started throwing up. And we were like, come on. He's like, I'll meet you there.
I can only imagine. Receiver hitches are rough, but that would be even worse.
I mean, it just hit a sharp corner. I mean, there was no give. The only thing that gave was like his skin and his shin.
Oh, yeah, that's rough.
That's like one of those times when, you know, when you fuck yourself up, you're just waiting for the pain to come up to your brain.
I'd probably be laying there for a while.
Yeah, but you guys.
Yeah.
I'm not even going to catch up.
I'm going to sit this one out.
Yeah, when that kid charged that hose, we were all like, huh, maybe you shouldn't be here.
Yeah, yeah.
But I know that, I remember that feeling of like, you're kind of grabbing those and you're like, oh, no, this one.
Yeah, it's like, which one do they have out right now?
Wouldn't kill them to, like, label them.
Yeah, yeah.
They're just, like, banking on everyone, like, memorizing
yep.
what's going on there.
Look out the side of the truck. It's like, okay, which one was that again?
And not to mention all the fun shit that is on all the cabinets and stuff.
Yeah. A lot of storage. Yep.
And a lot of good toys in there. But so let me kind of try and wrap us up here a little bit, which is metal transformations. I just want to bring home again one more time the idea of what can people reach out to you for and how do they find you?
So I am on Instagram and Facebook. Metal Transformations is my name on both of those. I want to do one-off projects. I want to do kind of anything that's not into, like, I don't want to do 20 things.
Mm-hmm.
But like, if you have something that wants to be built of anything you want,
like,
I'll figure
if
out
I come to you, like, I want the most kick-ass barbecue smoking thing,
I'll
like,
figure it out.
You're on it.
I very rarely say no.
Okay.
So, yeah, it's about anything you come up with, I will try it.
Okay, so I'm going to repeat that back. Your phone number's on your shirt, but Josh Weber, Metal Transformations, Facebook and
Instagram.
And if anyone has like a metal custom job, it's cutting, welding, they should reach out to you.
Yes, absolutely.
And that includes the Wichita area.
Yeah, Wichita, Hutch, pretty much anywhere within about 100 miles I'll go to.
That's perfect.
Actually, I went out about 150 miles here a couple weeks ago to build a whole building.
You did?
Yep.
Well, okay, so you have a good radius on what you're doing.
Yeah.
Well, reach out to Josh if you've got a project that's brimming and you need to get it built. But thanks for coming in, Josh. Yep, I really appreciate it.
Thank you for having me.
You bet.